Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of our other episodes at cinematica.co.nz. Everybody, regular listeners and new listeners alike. This is season 4, episode number 2 of Cinematica. I'm Dan Slevin, and here with me in the Cinematica studio today is
Kaylee. It's just the two of us.
It's really cozy today.
Is.
And you know what? Sai always slows us down, so we'll just be super you know, efficient and onto it, and we'll knock this sucker out.
Mm-hmm.
In pretty good order, because in today's episode, we are so excited, Kaylee and I, because we got to see the hottest ticket in town, Robert Downey Jr. in Iron Man 3. We're recording this on Wednesday afternoon, which would normally be the day before films open, but Iron Man 3 sneaking out a day early. Midnight screenings last night, we got to see it this morning, so that's, you know, pretty bloody exciting, I would say. The hottest ticket in America 2 weeks ago was Evil Dead. We'll be talking about that with a little bit of help from a guest reviewer. Gerard Butler tries to save the White House from North Korean terrorists in Olympus Has Fallen. And the voice of Brendan Fraser saves the world from the voice of William Shatner in Escape from Planet Earth. Yes, it's the school holidays here in New Zealand. But first, before we get into all of that, Kaylee, you're in charge of the mailbag.
Yes, indeed. And I knew in my heart of hearts I made an error last week when I said that Warm Bodies was a second rom-com, and it wasn't. I missed out on the Canadian film Fido. So basically now I have to give up my resident, you know, Canadian.
I was going to say, so it wasn't even the second Canadian. Well, it wasn't even the first Canadian rom-com.
It was the second one.
Goodness me.
I know.
Is there nothing original in
this
world? No,
so yeah, if you haven't seen Fido, and if you can track it down, definitely do. It stars Billy Connolly and Carrie Ann Moss, and it is very good and very funny. So thank you, Robert Caddo, fellow Canadian, for helping me out on that. What else? Reese Pie asked us, is there a rule about the two-word review having to be in English for Love Is All You Need?
Does it sound like we have any rules at all about anything?
No. I did tweet back saying that there are no rules, but I can't guarantee that I'll pronounce it correctly.
But I think
I think I can do this one. So the two-word review for Love Is All You Need is Storia Romantica.
Nice work. And for those of you aficionados of Kaylee's pronunciation, check out the news a little bit later on where we do the can rundown. Looking forward to that.
And Rudy Six sent us a suggestion for the new season sections on the show.
New
features, yeah. To add to the episode, a two-word review. Add a two-word review of the episode to the episode. I think that's what he was going for.
I don't think that's up to us, actually. I think that's listeners. Listeners, your feedback is actually really important to us, and we love getting mail, whether it's Twitter, Facebook. We've even had some actual sort of snail mail mm-hmm. from people. So, you know, we do this because we know you're out there, and there's been some. I've stumbled across some lovely comments from people in the last week. I got a new job this week, and one of the comments from somebody who I wasn't actually aware was a listener just said, "Oh, I hope that doesn't mean that Cinematica's gonna finish." And of course, no, it's not. Everything feeds into everything else, and so you know me, I'm super efficient. If I can use a joke somewhere, I will use it everywhere, and that's. Sort of how, I like to see Cinematica working. Mm-hmm. So, it's big school holiday weekend. Got underway last weekend, and of course the weather turned as well, so it was pretty rough. Did that mean a big uptick in box office? So, what did people go to last weekend, Kaylee?
Oh, we had some movement in the top five. So. Sitting at number 5 down from 3 is Warm Bodies. People obviously haven't been listening to the podcast because it should be number 1. Sitting in number 4 for the second week, Identity Thief.
Unbelievable.
opening at number 3, Olympus Has Fallen, which we will get to in a little bit.
Yep.
Down to 2 from 1 is Oblivion, and up from 2 to 1 is The Croods.
That's interesting, isn't it? So... That must be a little school holiday uptick, a little school holiday punch up there for the Croods, because Oblivion in the US, because it opened a week later than everywhere else in the US, and this weekend the American box office came out, and apparently it was the second biggest non-franchise Tom Cruise opening ever since War of the Worlds, which bodes, you know, for Tom Cruise and his management team and all of those sorts of people, this is fantastic, because it means that he can still open a movie just on his own basis without needing Mission Impossible or anything like that. So so that's really interesting that it actually dropped a little bit here in New Zealand. I wonder whether that's the same internationally. Apparently big opening in China as well, and places like that. So on that report there, does it show whether it dropped the screen average? Is always a really good sign. So like, did that change, or is that
it was playing on one less screen?
Who was that? Who was the dirty stop out that dropped it? Oh boy. The cruise management team will be scouring, find out who, where was it?
Scientology's coming after you.
I want names. Boy, anyway, so interesting times. I don't think there's any doubt at all that when we do this report next week, Iron Man 3 is going to be at the very top.
Mm-hmm.
We were having a quick look, because some of the figures have already come through from the big chains from their midnight screenings, and already multi-thousands of dollars coming in for Iron Man 3 just on the basis of those midnight screenings alone. So, I don't think a sweepstake would be a pretty unprofitable sort of thing to run on that one. But it's time for us to actually provide our verdict on the new Iron Man.
Nothing's been the same since New York. You experience things, and then they're over. I can't sleep. And when I do, I have nightmares. Honestly, there's 100 people who want to kill me. I hope I can protect the one thing I can't live without.
Some people call me a terrorist. I consider myself a teacher. Lesson number one. Heroes. There is no such thing.
That trailer has been around for a long time, so there's really no excuse for anybody to not be aware that Iron Man's coming. Kaylee, I'm going to throw this one over to you. We sat together this morning, very early in the morning, to watch
this. It's been a big day for us.
Yeah, it has. Mm. And so I'm going to throw this one over to you.
Just live together. I mean, really, at this point.
Yeah,
roommates.
Exactly. We've still got to do that. We've still got to do that Mean Girls thing. Hanging out for that. But anyway, just give us a little bit of background. What is Iron Man 3 about? And just try and place it in some context for us.
Right. Well, Iron Man 3. I'm guessing they've made this a solid trilogy, and that was the plan from the start. Not to say that there won't be more, but nice bookend. You know, trilogies are good. So in Iron Man 3, of course, we have Tony Stark, who is Iron Man, still reeling from the events of Iron Man 2 with aliens and stuff.
Well, the Avengers.
And the Avengers. The Avengers and all these things are happening. So it's great. It ties kind of this whole mythology of
Marvel universe. The Marvel universe is being knitted together in a really, really interesting way. Mm. Like, this is, it's engineering, you know, the way that these things are interconnecting. I watched the trailer for Thor this morning, and I realized that what they're doing is also really clever in that they're tying all this stuff together, but the tone of the individual characters is quite different. Like, the Thor story is much darker and moodier, and there's, you know, the whole idea of, you know, when you're dealing with gods, wisecracking doesn't seem to be a huge part of part of the deal. But with this Iron Man, you've really got a central character that Robert Downey Jr. just absolutely inhabits, and he's been given a fantastic script to work with, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm, definitely. And so we have a new evil that's coming after him, the Mandarin, played by brilliantly, loved this character, by Ben Kingsley.
Isn't it interesting how somebody like Ben Kingsley, who became a star playing possibly the most good person in the history of the world, has played villains ever since.
He's fantastic, though. Isn't he? His range is amazing.
Can I just pick it now? I just reckon Academy Award nomination for Ben Kingsley for this.
Really?
I'm just going to put it down now.
I'd say definitely a Teen Choice Award or like MTV Movie Award.
Oh, come on.
I don't know about Oscars.
No. Well, don't forget Robert Downey Jr. got an Academy Award nomination for Tropic Thunder. So it's not...
Oh, my God.
It's not beyond the realms of possibility a comic book tale like this could be rewarded. But you know, he would have earned it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you, we can't tell you much more about about it because this really is a film that spoilers would spoil.
Yeah.
So we're not going to go into too much detail. But you know, Ben Kingsley, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the best aspect of this. Oh, actually, the best aspect is Downey Jr. again, right? And whatever they're paying him, he's worth every cent, isn't he? Because, you know, he just delivers in movie star, effortless movie star charisma.
Brilliant. And also in interviews, you know, this is a character he said he really connected with, you know, his own struggles with alcohol and things like that.
And being a dick.
And being a dick to kids. But yeah, absolutely brilliant. Gwyneth Paltrow is, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow. She's the blonde, strawberry blonde, beautiful woman he has to save.
Her abs get a good workout.
I don't know how she has abs like that and like two or three children. I don't know.
Because she has lots of spare time.
What? Like, when do you have time to take care of your children with a body like that? Seriously, Gwyneth. But it's great. Yeah, I don't want to say too much because I don't want to give anything away because it's brilliant and it's so funny and the action sequences are so good and props to Weta for all their hard work on the animation and the other animation studio as well. I don't know how much they did.
Yeah, let's assume that Weta did most of it.
Yeah. I know some friends who, you know, has sweat, blood and tears over that. So yeah, fantastic. Absolutely the film of the week this week.
Yeah, and if you still believe that films, that the primary function of films is entertainment value, that, you know, it'll just give you some escapism for 2.5 hours where you'll be able to sort of leave your troubles behind, then Iron Man 3 is going to absolutely deliver. It's going to be worth every cent you spend on it. I would suggest that if you're tempted to spend another couple of bucks for 3D, probably don't need to bother. Because it's a post-converted 3D, which doesn't automatically mean that it's not valid.
There wasn't a lot coming out at you, though.
No,
except for John Favreau's finger. That was a bit gross.
Yeah, I could have done without. But I would say that I don't think you're not going to lose anything essential if you watch it flat, if you watch it in 2D. We watched it in 3D, and it was neither here nor there, really. I want to put a spotlight on the writer director of Iron Man 3, Shane Black, because this is a character. This is a guy who should have a very sort of important place in modern movie history, but I don't think his career has ever really taken off the way that it deserved to. This is the guy that wrote Lethal Weapon. Right, you know, that kickstarted along with Die Hard, kickstarted the modern wisecracking action movie, and
he's in full force in this one. Then,
oh boy, he also wrote Last Action Hero, and then after a long period without being able to sort of couldn't get arrested in Hollywood, it seemed to me, for some reason. He made his comeback in 2005 along with Robert Downey Jr. in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is a fantastic, fantastic film for both of them.
That's where I know the name from.
Yeah. So, you know, seriously great chops for Shane Black. And this is something I reckon is you notice has happened quite a lot with these Marvel films, in that they've gone and found writers and directors who have got enormous amounts of talent, but maybe their careers are not absolutely stellar. If you think Joe Johnston, who was famous for The Rocketeer, didn't really do very much else, but then sort of was brought back for Captain America, you know, and Kenneth Branagh, had not had a stellar career as a director before Thor. I think that with any luck, this is going to put Shane Black back on top, because the quality of the the script and the direction from a purely popular entertainment basis. I mean, it's just unimpeachable, I reckon. It's set an enormously high standard, hasn't it, for the blockbusters for the rest of the year.
Definitely.
You know, I finally got a chance to look at that that Superman, new Superman trailer, Man of Steel. And, you know, it looks so pompous, doesn't it? It does look, it all looks a bit up itself.
It looks like the original Superman, like really cheesy.
Well, and we can talk about this when it comes out, I guess, but it occurred to me that actually Superman is really only very interesting when it's an origin story. Mm. Like, and so they keep having to go back to the origin story, to reboot it, because actually once he becomes Superman, is not really very interesting at all. So I think that that's got a bit, it's got a lot to live up to here with Iron Man 3. I personally enjoyed it more than Avengers. I came out of Avengers feeling a little bit sort of, yeah, you know, it felt like wisecracking for wisecracking's sake.
That but we Joss went Whedon, to a pretty painful screening with that preview. It wasn't set up very nicely.
No, that's true. That is true. Certainly, maybe we should have just watched that, you and I.
But, let the rumor start.
Yeah, audiences. But I really think that, you know, of all of the Marvel universe, this is the one that I've enjoyed the most. I'm really surprised that they do seem to be getting better and better at it. So yeah, terrific. Do you have two words to help sum up Iron Man 3?
My two word review for Iron Man 3 is gold medal.
Mine are best yet.
Nice.
Welcome to Earth.
Now, Scorch has been captured
to save his brother.
Self-destruct sequence initiated.
Rescue pods don't self-destruct.
Welcome to Earth, Blue Buddy.
You're gonna regret it! Not good!
It's called a brain freeze. You need to learn to sip.
Get in there, alien!
I love you so.
Okay, Escape from Planet Earth. I'm going to toss this one over to you because you're our animation expert.
Yes.
And you got to see this last night, I think.
Did
you see it in 3D or 2D?
I saw it in 2D.
Oh.
It's about a planet on the
called Earth. Oh, no, okay, yeah. Great.
Sort of planet on kind of the other side of the solar system, who they are full of very intelligent beings. One of them is the hero, Scorch, voiced by Brendan Fraser. Woo, Brendan Fraser.
Is he Canadian as well?
He is. I don't know where he's been.
They're everywhere.
It's like The Mummy, and then he was just gone for a while.
So. Oh, he was in a really, really terrible Irish film earlier on this year, which we reviewed on this program.
Oh, right. I didn't see it.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you're lucky. So, and apparently there was the interesting news story, because he's going through a divorce at the moment, and he had to...
Ladies, he is single. Get on.
He had to make a submission to the court, you know, because he basically can't afford to pay his alimony at the moment. But I think he makes something like $9 million a year or something, and he still can't basically pay all of his bills. You know, the gardener and the this, that, and the other. No, it's a very strange wee career path that Brendan Fraser is on. Yeah.
Maybe he'd do better if his head wasn't so big and square. I don't know.
Or blue, as it is in this film. And of course, there's another Canadian in this, which is William Shatner. And is Rob Corddry Canadian? Because that would just be
I hope he is. I just want to add him to my posse. That's automatically happens. Rob
Corddry.
My buddy, who we talked about, who is in Warm Bodies, who's fantastic. So it's great to sort of watch him again. So anyway, you have this planet, and they are very intelligent, and they go out and explore their planets and, you know, save babies and things like that.
What was that about at the beginning? What were the babies doing there unattended in the first place?
I don't know.
That was the weirdest opening. It's like, I'm going to go down to this strange planet that's inhabited by all of these dangerous sleeping beasts and save the babies from the crashed spaceship.
I think you just have to put your Prometheus helmet on when you're watching it. Be like, it doesn't matter.
Oh, that
no
would
sense.
Be good. Prometheus helmet. Does it have Charlize Theron in it? Anyway.
No. It's the helmets that they took off that they should have kept on.
Oh, right.
Mission Control decides that they need to go explore the dark planet, which is Earth.
Because nobody ever returns. That's
nobody
right.
ever
it's,
returns.
It's so dangerous.
Yes.
Yeah, all of the expeditions to Earth have ended in mysterious silence.
Yes. And so, of course, where else would they land but Area 51?
Of course.
And then hijinks ensue once they get taken by the FBI / some sort of American...
Yeah, the American military. And the bad guy, played by William Shatner, I think he's just one of the best voice actors there is around. He just milks every single line, and it couldn't possibly be anybody else. Like you can't, there's no way that Shatner could mistake him for anybody else. It's fantastic. There's a lot of other voices in there that are really sort of, you know, the same old Jane Lynch, who's, a voice in lots of things. Who else features Jessica Alba?
Sarah Jessica Parker.
Sofia Vergara. I'll tell you what, a lot of the subsidiary characters, it seemed to me, relied an enormous amount on some pretty broad ethnic stereotyping. In terms of sort of Latin in her case, I'm just trying to remember which character it was. It's
the news anchor.
But there's, you know, it just seemed a little bit sort of cheap. Would that be a fair comment? It just seemed to be a bit cheap in terms of jokes, cheap in terms of animation. Like it wasn't the highest quality. Character design and the highest quality execution in the world. The Croods, for a particular age group, the Croods is just bombing it at the box office at the moment. It's got high quality, lots of jokes, good story, great voice cast, and et cetera, et cetera. I reckon Escape from Planet Earth is pitched at maybe a slightly younger.
Yeah, that's crowd. What I was thinking is it's a much younger animated film.
Yeah, it's got rocket ships. And so if you were sort of six.
Family
six,
values.
Yeah, 6 to 8 years old probably, rather than sort of 8 to 10 maybe. Mm. I mean, oh, that's very narrow.
There's nothing
objectionable.
Nothing objectionable, nothing scary really that's in it. It's pretty soft, so it is good for that younger audiences who are on school holidays. And parents who just sort of want a brain break, I guess.
Also, I think that it's probably fairly safe in terms of making some money because the school holidays do last 2 weeks and it's going to rain, isn't it, at some point. So, you take the kids to the Croods first, get that out of the way. They're super happy. They presumably will want some kind of Croods memorabilia from the candy bar. And then a week later, they've forgotten that and they want to go to the movies again. And what else have you got? You can't take them to Iron Man 3, really. No, you can't take an 8-year-old to Iron Man 3, I wouldn't imagine. And so this is it, and it's not a bad choice. But if you're a parent, I think you'd probably struggle to sit through it. This is one where you drop the kids off. There's not much in it for you.
Unless they're too young to be in the cinema by themselves, and then you should probably be with them. Please don't just drop your children off.
Yeah, but you and I know that in the real world, it's a babysitting device, isn't it?
It wasn't for me. My parents always came with me.
Well, interesting.
When I was young.
This is something we should talk about a little bit later on, maybe not in this show, but in shows future. There's an interesting statistic that I read the other day, and that is that kids who were taken to the cinema regularly by their parents are 3 times more likely to be regular cinema goers as adults. Mm. And so... this idea, this cinema going culture, it's really up to the parents to protect it and nurture it. Otherwise, kids are going to grow up without a cinema going bone in their body, and then where will we be?
Or if you're like me as a child and your small one finds it too scary to go to the movies, just let them watch a lot of good, well made movies at home, and then when they're ready, go to the cinema.
Yeah.
Okay. It was way too loud for me, so I can't even imagine what children are dealing with now.
Yeah, true. Oh, I know, it's another thing. Oh, so many complications. Mm. 2 words for Escape from Planet Earth. Okay, shall I go first?
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, I didn't really think about it that much.
It was only last night. Come on. My 2 words for Escape from Planet Earth, escape pod. Mm. Pretty crappy, isn't that? I know.
Yeah, let's go with I don't even have 2 words. I can't even think of anything.
Do you recommend it to people? Like, do you actually, is this one that you even, is even going to cross your mind ever again after we finish this conversation.
Probably not. But if you do have young children and they have already seen The Croods and they want something to do, I think this is a good movie that is, you know, aimed at a much younger audience.
Okay, yeah. And 3D. Oh, one final thought about this. Again, probably not a huge amount to be gained from the 3D out of Escape from Planet Earth, except if you are a 3D aficionado, if you're really interested in what the technology is doing. It did do a couple of things that I'd never seen before, which I thought were quite interesting and surprised me, actually, that an innovation or two like that would come from a film like this. But we shall see whether it gets picked up in terms of those ideas. But you know, apart from that, I don't imagine it'll ever cross my mind again after today. So now it's time to test your foreign language pronunciation. Boom.
Okay, are you ready? Are you ready? The big festival news since our last show is the announcement of the competition lineup for this year's Cannes Film Festival, which starts on the 15th of May. So soon! Yeah. The director's fortnight films were announced overnight, and special attention was being paid to the first film in 20 years from legend Alejandro Jodorowsky. How's that?
It's close enough.
In competition, there are new works from the Coens, Paolo Sorrentino, Polanski, yeah, Alexander Payne, Francois Ozon, Takashi Miike,
yep,
James Gray, Asghar Farhadi, and Nicholas Winding Refn.
Yeah, so I think that's an enormously strong competition lineup, that I have to say. Very, very excited that there's a new Paolo Sorrentino film coming so soon on the heels of the Sean Penn thing, which was my favourite film of last year, and the name of which I can't.
No.
This Must Be the Place, that's right.
This Must Be the
Place, yeah. And, you know, I was at the gym this morning, and as often happens when somebody finds out that you're a film reviewer, they say, so what was the best film you saw last year? And so I had to decide, I had to weigh up in a heartbeat whether I was going to try and explain to a complete stranger in the gym about This Must Be the Place and Sean Penn and a former pop star searching for Nazis in the in America. And I thought, nah, I'll just say Amour. Already, just to be on the safe side, Amour. And he went, oh, that was the one about the old woman who dies. Yes, that's the one about the old woman who dies. So good. Excellent. So Paolo Sorrentino, a new film from him. When I was at Telluride, did I tell you I was at Telluride last year?
Oh, no.
James Gray appeared to help with the presentation of the prize to Marion Cotillard, and he played a couple of minutes of the film that is going to be premiering at Cannes. And I have to say that 2 minutes of that particular film looked like Godfather Part Two. It looked amazing. So very excited about that. Thanks to the New Zealand Film Festival's autumn events, I've got to see some more Asghar Farhadi, the guy who made A Separation. About Ellie is just a brilliant, brilliant film. Better than A Separation. Don't know why it didn't get anywhere. But that, if you get a chance to see his films as part of those autumn events, you really, really should. And so a new one from him, that's, you know, big news as well. So, and new Coens. Oh, it's just, it's a brilliant lineup.
It's all going off. It's all going off.
In the south of France. Also, interestingly enough, I didn't realise until last night when I did a little bit of sort of digging, Wikipedia, what am I talking about? That Director's Fortnight is actually independent of the main festival. It's programmed completely separately. It's got a completely different organisation. It's like the Fringe. And it was started 40 years ago when the main Cannes Film Festival was shut down because of the strikes.
Nice.
And so the directors' organisation of France set up this alternative festival, and it's been running alongside ever since. And it's kind of competitive, like they're often going for the same films, but there it is sort of sitting alongside. So I hadn't realised. I thought that it was just like another arm, like Un Certain Regard or whatever. But yeah, so I learnt something.
Mm. And speaking of Certain Regard, the new film from Claire Denis. Is it Denis or Denis?
Denis, I would imagine.
Claire Denis has been relegated.
Like the Blondie song.
I don't know that Blondie song.
Oh, Denis, Doobie Doo.
No, I'm in love with you.
Anyway, that's showing my age, isn't it?
Along with new films by Sofia Coppola and James Franco. James Franco.
First feature.
Whoa.
Yeah, straight into Uncertain Regard in Cannes. No pressure, James.
Is it going to be as weird as his art?
Oh, wouldn't.
His art shows are so weird.
Yeah, and his... Or is it going to be as up its own backside as his poetry?
Yeah, or is it going to be like an ironic, like...
Hipstery,
yeah. Self-reflective piece.
Who knows?
Will it be his Instagram set to music? We don't know. James Franco, tell us the answer. Oh, and speaking of The World's End, The World's End director Edgar Wright announced via Twitter last night that the final film in the fabled Cornetto trilogy, the greatest movie trilogy of all time, which includes Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, will be released a month earlier than originally planned in the UK on July 19th. I might have to buy a plane ticket. Lucky British viewers can see a trailer for the film on the front of Iron Man 3.
Yeah. So that was a big surprise. Since when a film's coming out earlier? Like what kind
Because
of
Edgar Wright is the man, and he is organized, and he can get stuff done.
So it would appear. And I read somewhere today that apparently somebody was checking through all the list of people that Edgar Wright actually follows on Twitter. Because you know celebrities, they don't actually follow people, very many people. But apparently he follows Cornetto. Which that I found quite amusing.
He would. They would have found him probably.
Yeah.
He'd be like, "That's a good idea."
That's right. So I'm guessing that trailer.
And you can't imagine how excited I was when I moved to New Zealand and they're called Cornettos here, because in North America they're called something else. I can't remember off the top of my head. But
right. Well, there you go. I think that
such a loser.
That trailer. Very likely will be available online, I would say, in the next day or so. And, you know, is there any trailer more eagerly awaited than this one? They've managed to keep a lot of the details of this kind of under wraps, really. All we know is that it's a pub crawl, basically. Mm-hmm. And what did he call it in a tweet last night? He called it Barmageddon.
Yes.
Cannot wait for that. No word on whether the release date's moving forward for New Zealand, though. So I imagine that New Zealand distributors woke up to that news and went, "Hey, what?" little bit of a panic there. Hey, July 13th, that means it could be in the festival.
Wow, that would be amazing.
Wouldn't it? Oh, no, that's too much to hope for.
Come on. Well, I'm sure. Can we get the cast and directors?
Well, I was at a screening. I was at a screening of Hot Fuzz. Preview screenings of Hot Fuzz at the Embassy that Edgar Wright, Nick Frost, and Simon Pegg were all three at.
I'm gonna start crying.
And because Richard Dalton from the Lido, who got me an invitation, I got to have a quiet drink with him beforehand at
shut the front door. You better pull some strings, buddy.
Well, now with my
I'm gonna have to take some Adderall to calm down.
In my new job, I'll see what kind of leverage, I can get. But they did a world tour. It was like a rock and roll tour. They actually went and toured, and they work so hard. They opened that film everywhere, and so I got actually had a chance to chat one on one with Edgar Wright at that particular event, and it was so cool, and they lifted the roof off the Embassy Hot Fuzz. I mean just so excited. Not supposed to be excited. I'm supposed to be a little bit cool about this sort of stuff. I'm not supposed to be a bit of a fan, you know. Like, as a reviewer, you should be able to take a step back and be clinical and all those sorts of things. And
it's hard not to be a fanboy about Edgar Wright's work, because he's such a fanboy.
Yeah, true.
It's like, and that's his thing.
Yeah.
Or fangirl.
Yeah, true. Okay, unfortunately now, after all that excitement, we're gonna have to bring things down a notch or two.
Gerard Butler time.
Oh boy.
Olympus has fallen. Olympus has fallen.
Mr. Speaker, you are the acting president.
I want to speak for the Russians, the Chinese, the British, and the French. In that order.
If you attempt to retake this building,
I will execute
your commander-in-chief.
Oh, my God.
We have contact from inside the White House.
Identify yourself.
309er.
Jesus, Banning?
This is the same guy that was removed from the president's detail.
He is ex-Special Forces.
40 commandos breached the gate, 20 in are left.
Can we trust him?
With all due respect, I'm the best hope you've got.
Then I think we should all just give up now, shouldn't we? If Gerard Butler, if he is the best hope for anything.
If he's the only hope left for America, what are we going to do?
Or Hollywood. How is it that he keeps getting his name above the title on films? All right, this is mental. Wasn't he the Phantom of the Opera in the musical adaptation of Phantom of the Opera? I think he was. Maybe. I think he was the Phantom.
He's got that hulking man muscliness that the ladies love.
Really?
And men too. I don't, personally.
I had a conversation on Saturday night with somebody at a function who did tell me that as far as she was concerned, yes, he was a very good-looking man. Mm. I had to end that conversation fairly rapidly at that point to go and talk to somebody else. But I don't get it. He seems to be completely lacking in charisma, a sense of humour, a sort of movie star sparkle. We talked about Robert Downey Jr. earlier on, right? And you try and stick the two of them in a room together and try and photograph them both, and Gerard Butler would just disappear. He would evaporate because the camera does not love him, I think. But, you know, some people do because he keeps getting work, keeps getting high budget work. Well, not the biggest budget anymore. But, I don't know. This is a film that is very, very similar to another film that's coming out a little bit later on in the year called
White House Down,
which has Channing Tatum.
Another one of your favorites.
I don't mind the Tatum, the CT.
The Tate.
The Tatester. Because, you know, he actually does have some movie star sort of charisma, Magic Mike. Like he's relaxed on screen. He's got a winning sort of smile. He's a bit like The Rock in that he's managed to sort of overcome the muscle boundness of him.
Yeah, but like The Rock, he's literally muscled his way into Hollywood.
Yeah, and that's true. But it takes something else to sustain it, doesn't it? You know, like otherwise you just become like, I don't know, Steve Reeves back in the 50s or whatever. Mm. You know, it's like you've got to be able to do something else with it. And Channing Tatum does. And, you know, and we found out that in 21 Jump Street that he's got a sense of humour as well. So I think that, you know, why Hollywood insists on making the same film twice in any given year is beyond me. This one, Olympus Has Fallen, is very pompous, as you can probably tell from the title. Very serious, and it's not very much fun, I have to say. The North Koreans have taken over the White House with a combination of an airborne assault, a full-on assault from the front, and they also had a team sort of embedded in the South Korean diplomatic service who were in the White House for an important meeting. So
that sounds a bit too topical.
Well, maybe that was a stroke of luck for them in terms of, you know, plucked from the headlines, although one hopes that it isn't. And they take the president hostage. Aaron Eckhart plays the president down in the nuclear-proof bunker way down below the White House, and of course nobody can get in to rescue him except for Gerard Butler, who plays a former Secret Service man who was dismissed after failing to save the life of the First Lady in a car accident, and so he sees that there's trouble because he's working across the road at Treasury, and sneaks in the front door, and he's the last man standing. So basically what we've got is we've got White House, we've got Die Hard at the White House, right? It's one man taking the terrorists out one by one until he can finally get to the bunker.
This sounds kind of like a video game.
Yeah, it probably has a little bit of that first person shootery thing going on. Meanwhile, at the Pentagon, the Speaker of the House, played by Morgan Freeman, is now the acting president. Angela Bassett plays the head of the Secret Service, and Robert Forster is the chief of the army, and they are trying to negotiate with this North Korean terrorist who are holding them all hostage. He wants not the nuclear launch codes, but there's a special new thing called Cerberus, which is the code that allows you to detonate a nuclear weapon if you've launched it by mistake. You know, so you know,
right.
if you change your mind.
Right.
And it's in flight, then you need three individual codes, one of which belongs to the president, one of which belongs to the Secretary of Defense, one of which belongs to the chair of the Joint Chiefs. Mm. All three of those means you can basically turn one back and you can take a step backward from nuclear annihilation if you spot your mistake in time. This is all fairly far-fetched, I would imagine. But anyway, the terrorist wants those codes because he knows that he can actually blow those things up in the bunker before they take off, which means he could destroy America. So that's what's at stake. But
obviously they didn't watch Oblivion.
Yeah, exactly. Certainly didn't watch Oblivion in terms of twists either. But what we've got here is a far-fetched, fairly ludicrous situation where it seems that everybody in the senior leadership of the United States of America would basically throw the South Koreans under a bus in a heartbeat in order to protect their president. So that's what, 60 million people?
Hmm.
You know, 60 million people in exchange for one middle-aged white guy in a suit. Yeah, and that's and tell you what, it doesn't take long. It takes about 5 minutes for them to work out that that's what they would rather do. Boy, oh boy. I'll tell you what, if I was the South Koreans watching that, I'd be sweating because, you know, that's how much the Americans care.
Now let's see what our listeners had to say, because yes, we put out a call asking if anyone wanted to help us out with the review this week. I did not see it, so Dan is on his own. So after that
you call, left me.
I left you. So after the call for submissions, Dilla Monster replied, "Not going near that one with a 10-foot pole. But I know Mr. Todd has seen it." So speaking of throwing people out of the bus.
Yeah, exactly. And wisely, he did not rise to that bait.
No, the Rocket Robot, who unfortunately was not able to join us.
Yeah, we were going to try and get him on the show today, but unfortunately he had a very, very important prior engagement. So, next time.
Yes, but the Rocket Robot has seen it, but he'd only be evening Dan's Gerard Butler phobia out with his own terrible action movie phobia. Buckle 22 said, "Relentlessly moronic, brutal, jingoistic, and cliched, never getting near the unnecessary Die Hard in the White House attempt."
Hey.
Sakura 59 said, "I can't think of a worse attack on American soil action film. Absolutely mind-numbing with unwarranted, gratuitous violence."
I didn't hate it as much as that, because it seemed to me that it's directed by Antoine Fuqua, who knows a thing or two, right? Like, he's not an idiot. And it seemed to me that some of the action sequences were reasonably well staged, particularly that first attack. I thought, you know, got the heart going just a little bit faster than normal. But I mean, it is basically rubbish, isn't it? Let's not beat around the bush too much. Anybody got two words there for Olympus Has Fallen, or is that falling on my shoulders?
That is falling on your shoulders. No one wanted to watch.
Okay, so my two words for Olympus Has Fallen: butler bollocks.
Nice.
Right, well, next on the show, we get some more support from our brave listeners.
There was something in the woods. And I think it's in here with us now.
I read a passage from that book. I released some evil.
Sonal Patel, long-time listener, first-time caller, welcome to Cinematica.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure having you on the show. This is a listener-focused show, this one. We're getting a little bit of help with our reviews from reviewers from all over the place. Now, the other night, you and I sat together at a very chilly Embassy Theatre in Wellington for Evil Dead, and this is a film that seems to have a kind of schizophrenia about it. On one hand, it's the most successful box office horror film of the year in the United States. It was the number one film the week it came out. And here in New Zealand, it's slipping out in late shows at single cinemas. Now, you're more familiar than I am with the source material, shall we say. Can you tell us a little bit about how you think the two films, the original The Evil Dead and This Evil Dead, compare?
Well, the first major contrast is money. The very first Evil Dead was done on very, very low budget. This clearly has a lot of money thrown at it, even though all the effects are practical, so they're all done in camera. There's hardly any CGI. Mm. I think things like fire and stuff, that's probably about it.
There's a lot of prosthetic makeup, isn't there? The real craftsperson sort of stuff on show.
Oh, absolutely, especially in this new one. The old one, it's more like what they could find and grab together, and sets wobble and
right.
Prosthetics look very, very fake.
What sort of changes have they made to the story? Because my only experience of the original Evil Dead is watching Evil Dead the musical, which may even have diverged a little bit itself.
The biggest changes probably are in this case. Well, this version of Evil Dead seems to fit within the canon of the other three films, or four films, I think. It's not a reboot, and it's sort of not a remake. I think they're calling it an episode.
Ah, okay.
So it fits in the other one. So, but that said, the story is still four kids go into a cabin in the woods. Is it four? Five kids. The new one has a prologue, whereas the old one just went for more of the surprises, build in.
Mm-hmm.
What else is there?
Well, one of the things that surprised me about this one was the setup seemed surprisingly modern, in that Mia, the central character in the film, the reason why they're all gathered at this particular cabin is because she is desperate to kick drugs, and she chucks her drugs away down a well, and then tells her friends basically, don't let her leave, because this time she really means it. She's going to kick the junk for good. Was that the premise of the original film?
Oh, no. It's just the original ones were kids go into a cabin for a holiday, and that they hired on the cheap.
Ah, right, because this is a family cabin as well, because there's photographs of them all as kids there.
Yeah, so at least the new one tries to construct a backstory for the characters rather than just going straight into the gore, whereas the original didn't really bother with that.
Right, you do get the impression that the latest one is attempting to sort of match the very modern idea that there has to be some kind of moral core to your horror. Basically drugs are bad.
Yep, drugs are bad, and families should stick together.
and don't read the spells aloud find the scary book.
Quite. But actually, you know what? I think on that front, the original sort of tops it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's accidentally the spell is released. Whereas I don't know quite what was going on. He even had it written in Biro right there.
Yes.
Don't read it.
Don't say it. Yes, don't say it. And this is the spell is in fact uttered by the intellectual of the party, the one who wears the glasses, and he's a school teacher, I think, and yet he does the most colossally stupid thing in the entire film, and of which it's basically downhill from then on, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So we've got this premise, we've got these characters, and we've got spooky stuff happening to them. Does the spooky stuff work for you?
Yeah, you know what? For me, it really didn't. It's a very gory film. And as you'll remember, I flinched probably once at one particular scene, which was particularly gory. But there aren't any scares. It's more of a, you know, there's a jump, and in a sense, there's a bit of a cheat with loud music being the start of the jumps. Mm-hmm. But no scares as much. I mean, it's...
Yeah, so this is a film. This is a film where it's a little bit more like anticipation of the gore, anticipation of the injuries that puts you on the edge of your seat rather than what's around that corner.
Absolutely, there are no surprises in this, and it references a lot of modern horror, particularly Japanese horror. So if you're familiar with, say, The Ring, mm-hmm. there'll be a moment that you'll recognise within it. And less on the psychological, very much on what you see is what.
Well, they've gone to so much trouble with what you see, haven't they?
Yeah.
I mean, you'd be pretty proud of what they've actually achieved there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, it's a good film. There's nothing wrong with the film at all. It sits very comfortably within modern horror. It's a good horror gore film to watch.
Yeah, it's pretty well played by a bunch of unknowns as well. I'm just looking them up here. Just bear with me for
a
second.
It's his first feature. He's done short films before that.
Yes, that's right. Thank you, IMDb, for telling me. Fede Alvarez is the director and co-writer of this. And, yes, not much in the way of credits, but a lot of experience with visual effects and editing, which makes you wonder why maybe there weren't more sort of editing-type jumps.
Yeah, indeed. But, you know, for a first feature, again, and with so much expectation, that must have been seen on his shoulders.
Yeah, and you know that the original Evil Dead team, the Sam Raimi and mm-hmm. Rob Tappert, who are executive producers of this, that they would have been sort of looking over his shoulder and probably making sure that he didn't go too far astray.
No, not at all, not at all. But, you know, that all said, within the canon, it I just wonder how much it adds to it.
Yeah. Something you said to me on Saturday night, which I thought was really interesting, was that you thought that it lacked a little bit of humour.
Yes.
And is that something that was a strong sort of characteristic of the first films? Because, you know, bearing in mind that this is a film that the first Evil Dead introduced us to the great character of Bruce Campbell,
yes,
who's just a comedy legend.
Yes,
and you're right. This was a little bit light on laughs, wasn't it?
It's light on laughs, and you know, with so much gore, I didn't feel there was a moment you could just take a break as an audience to enjoy it. It felt at times very, very straight faced, and I mean that's not to say that the very first Evil Dead is funny. It's the other Evil Dead films that are, you know, tap into the horror humor, I should say.
Right.
But the first one, I think because it's so low budget, it has a charm to it and a slight campness to it that gives you a chance to breathe amongst all the relentless gore, you know, and blood that keeps coming at you. So it felt a little bit straight and a little bit mean on the characters at that point.
It's certainly nobody escapes some quite a quite ugly fate.
Yeah,
that's for sure. So you're a listener to the show, so you're familiar with how we have to sum these films up. It's our version of the two thumbs up from the late lamented Roger Ebert. So our two word review. What do you think you can come up with for that?
Ooh. Ungroovy gore.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Mine will be Bloody Mess.
Oh, nice.
All right. Sonal, thanks very much, and we'll have you back on the show soon, I'm sure.
Thanks.
Righto, Evil Dead, reviewed by Cinematica listener Sonal Patel. You can find her on Twitter at underscore Sonal, S-O-N-A-L underscore. Thanks very much to her for that. And actually, we might try and get her on the show again next week, because next week we're going to be talking about Antiviral, the new from Brandon Cronenberg, David Cronenberg's son. And she was at the same screening I was at on Thursday of that. So, and seeing as you're going to be busy for the next few days, you may not actually get a chance to see it. What are you going off to do?
I'm going off to a suburb of Auckland to do a meditation retreat. So I will be no Twitter, no Facebook, no phone, no internet, nothing.
Wow. Mm. I can't imagine. That sounds like torture to me.
I'm a bit worried. I might get bored, but yeah, I think I'll be okay.
You know what really worries me in those sort of situations is that if I empty my head, what would rush in to fill the space? That's kind of terrifying to me. What my subconscious might want to deliver me. So I'm, I feel much safer if I'm just sort of, filling it with film stuff. I have to say.
Yes, I will have Monday and Tuesday, so okay. I'll be back Sunday.
Okay, well, next week on the show we'll have Simon back as well. And it's another big week. We're going to be taking a close look at the ballet documentary First Position.
So good.
Oh, you've seen it already?
Yes, sir.
Oh, good. I'm looking forward to seeing it this weekend.
I saw the festival.
Ah, right. Mm. Okay, and Brandon Cronenberg, as I say, Antiviral. Is he a chip off his dad's block?
I'm really excited to see that. I need to see it.
It's... yeah, I don't want to give too much away, but that was playing as part of the Autumn Events. That Autumn Events program continues, of course. Recommend you check out New Zealand Film Festival site to find out what's screening in Auckland and Wellington. This weekend coming up, we've got Lawrence of Arabia at the Embassy, that restored version. Very much looking forward to that. And there's a whole lot of other stuff to squeeze into the show as well. In next week's episode of New Zealand's favourite movie podcast, which is called Cinematica. And we'll take this one a little bit slower because I know we've got a few more listeners because the Film Festival have included us in their newsletter.
Oh, yes. So, hello, new listeners.
Yeah, hi. If you're still listening now,
yeah.
This is pretty much what it's like every week. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget you can click subscribe in iTunes or your own favourite podcasting software, whether you're an Android or not. And that way the latest episode is always downloaded automatically, usually sort of around late on Wednesday night, so it's there for your Thursday morning commute. If you leave us feedback at the iTunes store or wherever you found the show, remember those ratings, reviews, they're super useful at helping new people find the show.
And keeping us on the air.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, I mean, the audience does go up every week. We're very, very pleased about that. You can contact us and give us feedback through various social media means, and Kaylee is our manager of that department.
We share it now, really.
Oh, I suppose that's true.
Yeah. We're a team. Anyway, you can find Dan and I on Twitter under Cinematica, with our Twitter handle at Cinematica.
Sai doesn't even know what it is, really, does he?
He doesn't really know. He doesn't really get Twitter. I'm supposed to teach him how to use Twitter, and I almost don't want to. Like, I want to have that as the final bastion of, like, social media I can keep for myself. Just kidding. Not really. You can find us on Twitter with our Twitter handle at CinematicaCast. We are also on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast. On Letterboxd as Cinematica, where you can find our two-word reviews. And, of course, on our website, where you can listen to the podcast and download the podcast and read news and look at the beautiful pictures we put together in Photoshop.
and something else that I'm not sure if it's entirely clear with the player that we have that's on our front page is that you can actually pause and jump forward and jump back just by clicking the sort of timeline on that on that particular player. It doesn't have a duration on it, so it's maybe not all that clear, but it is and if you pause it and you go to another tab, like you pause it because the phone rings or something and you've got to go and do something else or work, you can go back and it will remember where you were. So you can listen from the website directly, you can listen from our Facebook page, there's a tab,
of course, yes,
there where the shows are. You can listen at my blog Funerals and Snakes as well, so there's lots of different ways you can do it in addition to downloading and listening to it on your portable device.
Mm-hmm.
These show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music, which at the very beginning of the show, 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke. You can buy that at the iTunes store. And we're going to leave you with some more music. Kaylee chose this one.
One of the bravest music choices I have seen in a film.
In a big, big Hollywood movie.
For quite some time. Yeah. Took me a while to stop laughing and wipe the tears from my eyes this morning.
This is, of course, you've recognized it, and although most of you won't want to own up to it, this is Eiffel 65, 1999, and a song that is a guaranteed earworm for the rest of your day, Blue Dabadee. Until next week, that's all from me.
And you're welcome.